Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining me in the studio is Howie Klein, who's a progressive blogger and activist, as well as a concert promoter, disc jockey, music producer, record label founder, record label executive, and professor of music, who was president of Reprise Records from 1989 to 2001. And he writes at downwithtyranny.blogspot.com. Welcome to Background Briefing, Howie Klein.
So good news, though. downwithtyranny.com, that'll do it.
That'll do it.
You don't need the blog spot.
Okay. downwithtyranny.com. And, of course, we do have a tyranny of the minority. So the main question would be, how come, if this guy's got 35%, what's wrong with the 65%? What the hell's going on in this country where you have the most reactionary laws? I mean, look what's just happened with Trump. You know, he wants to bring back coal. And now he slapped a tariff on solar, which is going to kill solar. So the clock's being turned back right, left, and center. I don't understand why the majority in this country, I mean, more women marched on the weekend than the Tea Party would be able to field in 20, 30 years. And yet the Tea Party runs the Republican Party. So what's your explanation, since you're down with tyranny?
My explanation is that a huge number of Americans just don't vote. And the reason that they don't vote is because they've got this idea, and for good reason, that the best that you can get out of the Democratic Party is lesser of two evils. And, you know, although I try to help Democrats get elected, not all Democrats, but progressive Democrats, I have a PAC. That's the only thing about me you didn't mention. I have a PAC called the Blue America PAC, and we are out there trying to raise money for progressives. There are no Republican progressives, so they're Democrats. However, a good portion of the Democratic Party is at best the lesser of two evils. At worst, they're the same. Democrats go crazy when you say they're the same, but they're really terrible. In fact, I was just writing before I came over here today about Nancy Pelosi tomorrow will be campaigning for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I mean, to a lot of progressives, you say the name Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and what do they think of? Right away, the person who stole primary after primary after caucus after primary from Bernie Sanders to benefit Hillary Clinton. And, you know, that will discourage people from voting if they think that the system is rigged against progressives. And to be honest, in many times it is. There was a wonderful story this week that was all about the Colorado 6th District, where there's an awful DCCC, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee candidate who's a crook. He's just a lawyer who was helping payday lenders and doing everything he could against ordinary families. And the DCCC is trying to pass him off as, oh, some great military hero. And, you know, they're doing whatever they can for this really corrupt, crooked, conservative candidate named Crow. I think his name is Jason Crow, but his name is Crow. And there's a really good candidate who's running as well, and the DCCC is going out of their way to harm him. And how do they do that? They do it by telling donors not to give him money, telling labor unions not to support him. That's what they do. And in this particular instance, what got me to write about this is that Steny Hoyer, who's number two in the Democratic caucus in Congress, was in the district and telling this guy, get out of the race. Just get out of the race. You're just making trouble. We don't want you in the race. And I have lived for decades of watching Steny Hoyer and Rahm Emanuel and other corrupt Democratic bosses from the establishment end of the Democratic Party doing that to candidates, going to progressive candidates, to reformers, and telling them, get out of the race. We don't want you. So when you ask a question like that, the answer is, there is some sense in people not wanting to vote. Why would someone want to vote for this kind of corruption? It's absolutely awful.
Right. Well, that applies, for example, in Arizona. We got Kyrsten Sinema running for the Senate. She's a congresswoman who votes with the Republicans something, I don't know, 80% of the time.
That's right.
So she's going to be running against Martha McNally, a Republican, is an A-10 fighter pilot. So I would vote for the authentic Republican, not the fake one.
Well, a lot of people say that. Yeah. Now, well, we don't know if McSally is going to get that nomination because the Republicans have a big primary. So they've got like two psychopaths running. One is this woman named Kelly Ward, who's completely crazy. And the other one was the other one's crazy too, but Joe Arpaio, the crazy sheriff.
Exactly.
So we don't know who's going to actually be the nominee. Of course, the Republican establishment wants it to be McSally. But, you know,
they may have the same problem.
They have very much have the same problem.
Right. And again, I'm joined in the studio by Howie Klein, who's a progressive blogger and activist, as well as a concert promoter, disc jockey, music producer, record label founder, record label executive, and professor of music, who was president of Reprise Records from 1989 to 2001. And he writes at downwithtyranny.com. So, a previous guest, of course, was talking about how California's fighting back against the war in California by Trump and the Republicans. We don't need to list how they're attacking this successful progressive state with making us pay more in taxes, going after marijuana laws, sanctuary cities, offshore drilling. So the point that he made finally was that at the end of the day, the greatest hope for California is that they can flip, if not the 14 Republican seats, that's not going to happen. But 11 of those 14 Republicans voted for this terrible tax bill that's going to hurt their constituents. What's your reading on the chances? Because you'd only need to flip 24 seats. So California could go a long way towards taking back the House.
Right. California is probably not going to be able to flip even half of the 24 that's needed. But my belief is that, don't worry, because it looks to me like there'll be 50 seats that flip, or even more than 50 seats. I see a big blue tsunami coming. But in California, there's probably 7, 8, 9, maybe even 10 seats that will flip. So the Democrats are going to pick up quite a lot of seats. And you know, my fear is that the DCCC, again, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, is screwing it up. They are going out of their way to try to push conservative Democrats. I'll give you some examples of that. But first, I want to give the good news. Of all the regions in the country, so the country is divided by regions, there's one good regional vice chair of the DCCC. He's literally the only good person who works at the DCCC, and it's a local California congressman from the beach cities and Santa Barbara and up into Malibu. His name is Ted Lieu. Ted Lieu is fantastic, and he's not allowing the DCCC to do what they're doing in every other region. So what they do is they favor the conservative candidates, they favor the corrupt candidates. And when I say they favor the corrupt candidates, that's literal. They want someone who's going to be part of the money game and go with the lobbyists who then pay off the party. That's what Steny Hoyer does. That's what Pelosi does. That's how they get their power. And
but
Ted
does
isn't
that mean
allowing
these people
that.
Already have money, though? Is that what that's a,
some they, of them have money.
Yeah.
Some of them are self-funders.
They like self-funders, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. But Ted isn't allowing that. Ted is enforcing neutrality in the primaries, and he's successful at it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's good. Now, there are quite a few districts that Hillary won in her race against Trump, and the DCCC theory is we can pick up any of those districts. Well, I don't know if that's a good theory. The better theory is there's going to be a big blue wave, and we better have good candidates in every district. Now, some of them, you know, there's a thing called the PVI, which tells you how Republican or how Democratic a district is. So, in a normal election, anything for a Democrat to look at a district, anything that's over a PVI of R+1, R+2, R+3, maybe even R+4, that's too high to go. But in a wave election like we're going to see now, a PVI even of R+10 is doable. That's why I'm saying we can get 7, 8, 9 Republican seats for the Democrats. You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but last night, so Tuesday, there was a state legislative race in Pennsylvania. It's a little sort of district in the Monongahela Valley, so McKeesport, which is southeast of Pittsburgh. So it's not like a super Democratic district, but Hillary won it with 53%. So she won it, and in a 53% isn't bad in a presidential election. And it's a generally a Democratic district that gives Democratic candidates around that number. Well, last night, the Democrat who won there, who happens to have been an African-American, and that district has never elected an African-American before, he won it with over 70 points, over 70%. So that when I'm talking about a wave, that's what happens in a wave. You know, for a year before it, you're seeing these districts, even if they don't swing all the way to give a Democrat a win, they're going up by 20 points. Right. So in a district that has R+5, R+6, R+7, those districts, Republicans are swept away. They lose. You know, if someone swings, like happened in Pennsylvania last night, well, if all you need is 10 points, you win. Sure. Now, in California, when you look at the districts, like, for example, San Diego, the northern San Diego County, southern Orange County, that's California 49. So right now, the congressperson is Daryl Issa. Mm-hmm. Daryl Issa saw the handwriting on the wall, and he's taking a walk. He's leaving. He knows he can't win that district. That's an even district between Republicans and Democrats. He knows no chance, and he left. He's hoping to walk into another district because the district next door, there's a congressman named Duncan Hunter, a Republican, and he's likely to be indicted. He was stealing money. He got caught. And if he gets indicted, then Issa will try to run in that district instead. But in terms of California 49, that's a sure win for a Democrat. And now there's a big fight among Democrats. Now, this is really funny, Ian. So there are several money candidates, establishment money candidates, who think they can just march in and win. Now, Doug Applegate is the progressive candidate. He was a Bernie supporter. He came within about 1% of beating Issa last time. Issa wound up spending $6 million, a lot of it his own money. And this guy, you know, managed to spend a couple of million dollars, but that's a big disparity. Right. In a wave election, that kind of disparity doesn't matter. Right. An incumbent who the wave is going after his party, an incumbent can spend five times more than the challenger and still lose. Right. And I'm not just saying that off the top of my head. I looked at the two wave elections that were recent in 2006 when the Democrats won and in 2010 when the Republicans won. And what I just said is borne out in district after district. Dozens and dozens of districts where candidates thought, "Well, I'm okay. I'm going to spend $5 million, and my opponent only has $1 million, right. And they lost."
Right.
So, well, in any case,
that's the Michael Huffington syndrome.
Yes.
So let me, and of course, Applegate is a Marine colonel too.
Talking about the most Marine district in the whole country,
it's Camp Pendleton, there, yeah. Right there. So let me ask you though, just to follow on from yesterday's interview I did with a co-author of a new study from the National Bureau of Economic Research, "From the Bargaining Table to the Ballot Box: Political Effect of Right to Work Laws." And one of the points that he made was that these right to work laws are drying up money because unions have to fight to survive. They can't give money to the Democrats as they normally used to. Plus, unionization is going down and down. But the other factor that he brought up is that because of the fact that Democrats have moved towards Wall Street and away from unions in terms of their funding, they don't run blue collar candidates. And blue-collar candidates would have won in those three districts that Hillary lost, the three states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. You're helping Randy Bryce, who's a steelworker, a blue-collar guy, running against Paul Ryan. Sounds like we need more Randy Bryces.
Very much so. And Randy has been going around the country helping other Democrats, other blue-collar Democrats, which is really satisfying to see. But, I mean, I'm not just helping Randy Bryce. I was one of the people who recruited Randy Bryce to win. I'm the one who connected Randy Bryce up with his campaign team, his campaign manager, his consultant. And Randy is a phenomenally good candidate. And of course, like you said, he's actually an iron worker. And Randy is looking so good in his district. I mean, the polling, the focus groups show him winning, that it's likely that Paul Ryan won't even run this race.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an amazing – that in itself, getting rid of the speaker, is huge.
It's, in our lifetimes, it's only happened once before. And
right.
that was
against the Republicans with Dave Brack going after – oh, that was Cantor. Yeah, oh, Foley. I was thinking about Eric Cantor. He wasn't the speaker.
No, he was the majority leader.
Yeah.
But what happened in up in Washington State, eastern Washington, the Spokane area,
right.
they started this rumor about Tom Foley. He was the Democratic speaker.
Yeah, yeah.
They started the rumor that he was gay, which he wasn't. He wasn't – I mean, he was a happily married man. He was not gay.
Right, right.
And it was funny because it was an accident because someone was running for the first time who was gay named Foley. It was Mark Foley.
Oh,
so it was kind of ironic that happened.
Right.
Yes, a Republican.
Yeah, because
but they started the rumor about Tom Foley. He lost the seat.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the fourth-ranking Republican in Congress, what's her name? Kathy McMorris Rogers. She has three names, and she has that seat now.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who's running against her, Lisa Brown, is with the former. Majority leader of the state Senate, and and she is the chancellor of the University of Washington in Spokane. It looks like she's going to beat her. So what you have is the speaker is going to be is going out in Wisconsin, and then the district where the Republicans took Tom Foley's seat, the only Democratic speaker.
Right. Little poetic justice there.
Yes,
yeah.
A very good one.
Yeah. So I would love to see Devin Nunes knocked off in the Central Valley. Not a progressive area. I don't think there's any way of getting rid of Kevin McCarthy, who's Donald Trump's new best friend.
Right.
But what about getting rid of Nunes? Is there any way to do that?
Yes. Nunes is somewhat vulnerable. It's a very Hispanic area. And the key to getting that to happen, to getting that is to combine the Anglos who are angry about the Russia thing. Because there are a lot of people up there who are angry with Nunes because they feel he's conspiring with Trump on behalf of Putin, and there's a lot of anger about that. But you need to combine them with the working class Hispanic people up there. And it can be done, but it will only be done if you have a Hispanic candidate and the establishment is insisting on this guy, Andrew Janz. Now, I have an interesting story about Andrew Janz because when he first decided he was going to run, I had no idea what he was like, and I got in touch with him. And I started asking him questions, and he didn't know anything about what the Democratic, you know, this energy in the Democratic Party is about. I said to him, how do you feel about single payer? He didn't know what it was. How do you feel about Medicare for All? He had never heard the term. He just didn't know what it was. And then he said to me, can I tell you the reason I'm running? I said, absolutely. I'd love to hear why you're running. He said, there are two reasons I'm running. One of them is because the death penalty doesn't get used enough. And the other is because we need more respect and more support in the Democratic Party for the Second Amendment. People need to be able to go out and get guns.
So this is the guy.
This is a Democrat.
That, yeah, but he's running as a Democrat. But this is the guy that the Democratic establishment is supporting as opposed to the Latino guy?
Yes. There's a Latino guy named Ricardo Franco who is, he's a Latino guy from a blue-collar family. But you know what? He went to University of Pennsylvania, and he is a very, very, very well-educated, well-spoken guy who knows how to write and could be and is a grassroots activist. Mm. He would be a really, really good congressman, but the establishment would rather see a progressive lose and Nunes win than back a progressive. That's how they are, not just up there, but in Washington, D.C. as well.
So that, to my mind, means that the Democratic establishment has not learned a damn thing from what happened with Bernie Sanders. And it's the same attitude. They're still thinking like Hillary. For reasons I don't understand, Hillary never ran him as a VP, never offered Bernie the VP slot. She chose this guy who did absolutely nothing for her, Tim Kaine. It was a complete locks.
No, slightly more conservative than she is.
Right, but he went nowhere. And Bernie would have got her over the top with a huge
certainly
margin.
In Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, maybe even in Ohio.
Exactly. I mean, so, and the fact that he did so well and drew all those crowds and brought all those young people in and fired up the base, it's like it never happened to them. What is their problem? Why don't they recognize that this guy is an ally of theirs, that they could build on this alliance? And by the way, one of the most interesting books written about American politics was Strangers in Their Own Land by a sociologist at Berkeley. She spent 5 years down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, studying the people who vote for Trump. And the one person that the Trump voters respected on the other side was Bernie Sanders. So he has traction in the alienated white working class. So what's their problem?
You know, before I tell you what their problem is, I want to tell you that Trump's main pollster said that we couldn't have, about the Trump campaign, he said we couldn't have beaten Bernie. Mm-hmm. Even they recognized that they wouldn't have beaten Bernie. Hillary was the candidate of the status quo in an election year when everyone wanted change. People wanted change, and she was against change. That basically, she was the conservative, not in terms of a conservative mm-hmm. party, not mm-hmm. even in terms of conservative policies. Mm-hmm. She was the conservative in terms of being the avatar of the status quo.
So, but why haven't they learned? Why are they still running the party as though Hillary's a candidate?
For their own benefit. They all get rich from these people. That's their bread and butter personally.
Yeah, but they don't want change. But the rank and file don't like being in the minority.
No, the rank and file don't. That's why they don't vote.
No, but I'm saying, I mean, the members don't like being in the minority.
Right.
Why?
They're being sold a bill of goods. So it goes back to 2006 when Rahm Emanuel came up with this whole theory, and they still live by that theory. Someone told me something really funny today. I use it in my blog. I can't even remember who it was anymore who said it to me. It might have been Alan Grayson telling me this, that if you keep doing the same thing, you keep getting the same results. Right. And he said it much more elegantly than that. But that's exactly what the DCCC does. They right. keep doing the same thing and getting the same results.
Well, they got to stop being afraid of their base. They got to start embracing their base as opposed to running away from them. It's crazy. And the blue wave that you talk about, let's hope they don't shoot themselves in the foot.
My first post for tomorrow morning, which I've been working on, is called Can Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer Stop the Blue Wave?
Well, let's hope the answer to that is no. And I thank you for joining us here in the studio, Howie Klein.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Howie Klein, who's a progressive blogger and activist, as well as a concert promoter, disc jockey, music producer, record label founder, record label executive, and a professor of music who was president of Reprise Records from 1989 to 2001. And he blogs at downwithtyranny.com. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.